The Psychedologist.
Shelby is a volunteer with the community organization Bay Staters for Natural Medicine, who recently advocated for decriminalization in East Hampton, Massachusetts. Shelby has an interest and background in environmental and biological science, as well as culinary and visual arts. They sustained a traumatic brain injury as a child. This shaped the way that they live and the way that their mind works. In this episode, we talk about prohibition, decriminalization, and public health. Shelby shares about their experience with having a TBI and their thoughts about pharmaceutical medications, the medical system, at-home psychedelic use, and community psychedelic use. The conversation turns to identity and the trap, but also usefulness of putting people into boxes. Shelby recounts their experience of growing up non-binary in a rural area without a lot of support. We wrap up the conversation by talking about gender, nudity, and our mutual love of plants. Hey, Shelby, welcome to The Psychedologist.
Hi, glad to be here.
Thank you for helping to decriminalize East Hampton, Massachusetts. I just feel like all the little towns are gonna be for natural medicine soon, and things will be a whole lot better, I bet.
I really hope so. I'm kind of surprised, though, even in the smaller towns and in small communities where everybody seems to know each other, that a lot of the conversations around psychedelics, especially in terms of like people with any kind of power, like city councilors, tend to always fall back to this fear of how the community is going to handle, basically being in charge of their own choices. And those are the things that are the most striking to me and kind of hard to work around, because especially in those communities, it's like, we all know each other. Like, do you really think that your neighbors are going to like become drug lords or something, you know?
I hope they do.
No, just kidding. So those are the kind of the most surprising things I've encountered that I wasn't really prepared for in dialogue originally, but it's one I keep in mind and am ready for now. And I have these conversations with people. It's kind of like, well, but don't we know everyone in our communities? And can't we talk to people in our communities? And wouldn't that kind of alleviate that concern?
Right. And not to mention, like, I feel if people know, like, how to use things safely, don't they tend to want to be safe and, you know, make safe choices? It's like just a little bit of education is all that might be needed if things weren't safe. It's like prohibition is not safer.
Yeah. That's the biggest thing. It's we've seen over and over again that prohibition just makes accurate information very hard to access. And in conversations with a lot of people who aren't familiar with psychedelics in their own use or know anybody directly who's been open with them about using them, a lot of people, even if you're talking about like natural plants or like mushrooms specifically, a lot of people seem to, who aren't actively involved in that work, have these impressions that you're like completely unaware of yourself when you're on these drugs, and they kind of almost relate to it like what you would expect for somebody who is on like PCP or something, where they're like really unaware of their surroundings or themselves. And it's all because there's not been accurate information, and it's not been given to people for years at this point. And because of that, there is so much misinformation and confusion. And it's like, this is exactly why we need things to be accessible and need to be able to talk about them, because that's the only way, especially younger people, can make informed choices, is with accurate information. So.
Totally. Yeah. So speaking of younger people, what were your younger years like? What was your relationship to consciousness as a little one?
I had a traumatic brain injury pretty early in my life, around age 7. So my memory with myself kind of begins around that age and that point. And back then, my relationship with myself as I saw it and my mind, honestly was really conflicted in a lot of the ways that I wanted to express myself or communicate with my peers. I, you know, would want to connect with them, but be unable to, and then kind of have this mental back and forth with myself and kind of an abrasive relationship with myself and my conscious of like, well, why can't you do this, you know? Which is something I've had to work on growing up, but I think that it's definitely improved.
I'm glad to hear that. And then did psychedelics come into play in context of the TBI, or like, well, obviously later on because you were little, but.
Yes. When I got into my preteens, really, I had a lot of difficulty kind of experiencing joy at all in things that I like wanted to do and participate in, even things with my friends. I just had a lot of difficulty finding joy. So then I ended up throughout the years being put on like pharmaceutical medications to try to change my brain chemistry. And they really just caused me to have a lot of side effects and to be disconnected with myself. So then when I got a little older, coming out of high school, going into college, I was lucky enough to be introduced to psychedelic mushrooms. And I had an experience with those that really changed the way that I was able to like experience even stimulus around me. I remember just like feeling the sun on my skin and like enjoying it. And that was a feeling that I hadn't had before.
Wow.
So it was really big for me. And I was able to get off of the medications that I was prescribed after that experience, and being able to come off of those medications was really, really life-changing for me because they were affecting me in so many ways, and I had been on them for so long. Some of the symptoms I had normalized as part of myself or part of my behavior were actually from the medication. So I kind of had to like restart learning about myself and learning about kind of what I wanted to do in general and things I wanted to explore and learn more about, because those were parts of me that had always been kind of shut off by these medications. And they also gave me like physical side effects I wasn't even aware of until I came off of the medication, like physical numbness. And yeah, it was just really, really like life-changing to be able to come off of pharmaceutical medication that I had to be on from like age 12 to 19. So it was really big. And I definitely want more people to be able to have more options in those situations.
So it sounds like psychedelics were like helping you come into your body almost in a newer way too, because you were like a young adult at that point, but you'd been on the medications for so long that you didn't totally know your body.
Yeah. And I, physically I felt like I didn't know myself, and, you know, mentally I just never really got the opportunity to explore things that I enjoyed because I just wasn't getting enjoyment from things. So I just kept kind of bouncing around to trying whatever other people were doing to see if I could find something that fit, and nothing really seemed to at the time.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing all of that. It's really moving. And so what I'd have a hard time answering this question that I'm about to ask you. So sorry. But so what would you say that psychedelics have done for you?
For me, they really, I mean, first and foremost, they gave me the, I think they gave me the ability to feel happiness and feel joy, even from just things like the sun being on my skin or, you know, seeing like animals playing or something adorable, you know, just having those moments or things that were completely not existing in my life before. And because of that, I really struggled with the negative parts of life or the heavier parts of life because I didn't have the offset of experiencing happiness and joy. So I think it really just provided a balance for me that never existed before that.
And then what brought you to do the activist work that you're doing now?
I still have a lot of physical disability and neurologic issues from my injury. So I'm heavily involved in the medical system as it exists and the therapies that are available as they exist now. And it's a system that's really not designed for everybody. It's a system that can be really limiting and can be, if it's not working for you, it can be really, really overwhelming and kind of push you further to feel like, you know, it's not working out or there's not a way for it to work out for you. And when providers don't have any other options for you or suggestions for you on how to move forward, it can feel really helpless. So I think that it's really important that we reconsider the way that we think about medicine, that we think about treatment and therapy and really what it is that heals people, and giving those things a space in the realm of medical practice so that there is a support network and there is accessibility for everybody, not just people with wealth and access, you know, through these alternate methods. They need to be something that's really available to everybody, and the information needs to be available to everybody.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. And I think with the information being available to everyone, there's also this benefit of community being able to heal together and not like necessarily needing to go to institutions for our mental health, or like even to, you know, the thought that to have to be legally taking a psychedelic, you'd have to go to a clinic and be given it by a psychiatrist or a therapist. I think that it's a great fit for some people to experience psychedelics that way. And I'm glad that, you know, it seems like there's no question we're going to have that. But I hope that's not the only thing that we have.
Yeah, I would like to really see people being able to take part in healing and healing others outside of just the current medical structure, and have it be recognized as a therapeutic experience, and have their work be recognized in that way and valued in the way that we value people who currently do, I'm going to generally call it Western medicine, because we just need to include all of our community members and all the skills that we have as people, and all the things that we've learned through our lives all have value, and the things we can give to other people have value. and should be included in that system of value in medicine.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, my journey has even been like that. I had some values instilled in me from grad school and like, I don't know. Yeah. I went to public school from elementary through high school and college. And I went to a private school for grad school, but by that point, I feel like it doesn't make a difference. But I had been indoctrinated in this way of seeing things that was really harmful. It was like, I didn't like have any awareness of colonization or gentrification. Like these are words I learned like far out of school. Even like what feminism was like just barely touched upon, a disease model for illness of like, this is the illness that the person has. This is the treatment. This is the outlook for them, like whether they'll heal from it or not. These people experience this illness more, just so very, limited in its scope of like the human within a context of a whole culture. Now I'm like, what had me saying that? I'm trying to remember. Oh yeah. So like unlearning and like finding within ourselves or within our communities, the values and even just truth of who we are. It's momentous. And yeah, I don't think I could have done that if I stayed locked into the, mainstream or Western medicine, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, it's definitely, I think for all of us, especially those of us who have gone through, traditional institutional learning, whether it be even public elementary school to public high school to college, a lot of the ways that we're taught to see ourselves and see each other is very, for lack of a better word or phrase, is like in little boxes. You know, you're either in box A or box B or box C, but as you talk to more people and learn more about their life experiences and see the wider scope of things in the world, I've just been seeing over and over and over again that there's not these clear categories of anything. There's just a combination of some elements of like box A, B, and C for people in different proportions. And I think that there's no way to successfully divide things up so much into categories that actually works for everyone. And I think that that needs to be part of the conversation, is more about accepting that there is always variation and that everything kind of exists for everyone in a spectrum.
No, I definitely agree with that. And you and I have this thing in common of like that we've been on a body dysmorphia journey. Would you be willing to talk about that for yourself?
Yeah, definitely. Ever since I was a young child, I have been non-binary in the way that I identified with myself in terms of gender. And coming from a very small rural area that caused a lot of conflicts, even within my family and within the school system. And I remember moments of growing up and throughout school where I was just being me and like, you know, enjoying myself for the most part, and then being told like I wasn't wearing the right things, or I didn't, you know, I wasn't looking right for how I'm supposed to, or, you know, I just wasn't doing, I wasn't, you know, the perfect little girl, or even on the other end of that spectrum, I wasn't quite right like a boy. So, you know, and then my clothing being policed by parents or by the school just always was something that I had a hard time understanding initially, and then it was something that I internalized and had so much anxiety about, and even still do. Like when I get dressed or picking out clothes, it's like, well, is this acceptable? Is this right? And I just want other people to not have to grow up in those experiences and get to just be comfortable as themselves and have people just accept people as they are. I mean, we're all the same, really. So I try to work towards that, especially around nudity and things like that, because I feel like that's really the root of it for a lot of people is the physical differences of people's bodies. But again, they all exist in a spectrum. There's not like a binary side to that. And I think that if that was the way we saw things from the very beginning and accepted people's bodies and were taught that there's no right or wrong way to do things, that maybe people can grow up being more comfortable and then also interacting with people in more healthy ways about themselves and not like super sexualizing bodies or clothing even, you know.
Yeah, I really hear you. It's reminding me of my first time I went to a nude beach. I was visiting my family in Latvia, where they were living at the time, and I was like, I want to go to a nude beach, like, because they have them there. And Europe is like, it's way less of a big deal, the naked body, especially like, you know, like, I feel like bikini top is kind of like optional almost anywhere, and that's okay. I mean, I have not been everywhere in Europe, but it just seems more widely accepted. And my grandmother was from the Czech Republic, and she would always just like strip her bathing suit right off on the beach to like change into her clothes. And I remember my mom, who's like, she's like a wasp, you know, like, ooh, like Bubby. But I'm grateful Bubby set that example, because I always take my bathing suit off and put my clothes on. Like, I don't want to put clothes over a wet bathing suit. Like, someone sees my butt for a second, like, we're all going to be okay, I think. But anyway, my first visit to the nude beach, I was walking into the water. It took some time to get up the courage to like, I was sitting naked on my blanket. I was like, okay, go in the water. And I was wading in, and then this family of four was coming out with two little kids, and I presume two parents or two adults. And I was like, oh my God, I've got to cover myself. These children, they're going to see my body, and it's inappropriate. It's profane. And I was like, oh no, wait, like everyone's naked. We're all here to do this. It's not profane. And it was just like a big moment for me.
Yes, I definitely think that that's the biggest thing I wish that we could all let go of collectively, globally, is that like nudity is, you know, profane, and that you should have to be uncomfortable if you're doing, you know, doing things that just make sense, like taking off a wet bathing suit to put dry clothes on for your health and your comfort. And, you know, that like shaming of ourselves that we carry with us and definitely affects us all the time in ways that I think a lot of people are disconnected from or don't realize that, you know, that's underlyingly making them uncomfortable. And it makes them uncomfortable when they see other people being comfortable with themselves because they can't be. So then there's like this animosity there. There's so many levels.
And not to mention, I think sexual violence maybe is higher too because of this standard of this way of looking at things.
Yes. And especially that nudity can be taken as an invitation is something that I really wish we could distance ourselves from, because, you know, we are naked all the time. Like, whether or not we wear clothes for comfort or for the climate, you know,
the fact is we're really all naked. And that's like the way that we are. And if we're existing in that way, especially if you're wearing lack of clothing because it's really, really hot and that's what makes the most sense for you, for your health at that moment and your well-being, you should be able to be comfortable and not have to be like, oh my God, what if my neighbor can see me through my window? You know, like even in your own home, you have to be like uncomfortable because you're taught that it's like offensive, and like the way that we just exist shouldn't be offensive. It shouldn't be sexual. It shouldn't be an invitation. So, and getting into conversations with people who really see nudity as like strictly sexual is always interesting to me. And sort of hard to navigate sometimes because I feel like in those conversations, sometimes people just default back to like, well, it is sexual, you know, like it is. And then it's like, but it's not, you know, unless somebody is actively telling you that it's sexual and that they're, that's the purpose of like their intent. It's not just inherently that way. And it's always interesting for me to try to like recontextualize nudity in these conversations to kind of open people's minds because it is so deeply ingrained that nudity is always, always sexual or always, always inappropriate unless it's sexual, which is also part of the problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Thank you for saying all that. I'm like, yeah, how has this show had 85 episodes of consciousness positivity and we've never talked about nudity? Like, it's about time. Yeah, and I'm also thinking about fat shaming and our fat phobic society and that like, right, certain nude body, if any nude body is acceptable, it's probably not a fat nude body. Like that's like another level of an affront to the dominant culture. And yeah, and I push back on that as much as I can.
And you can really see that on social media, in the content that is allowed to stay up and the content that gets taken down. A lot of creators that I follow and support that are on their own nudity journey, a lot of the people whose content gets to stay up are skinny white people and heavier people, their content will get taken down even if it doesn't actually violate any of the rules of social media. And it's just so clear that these ideas are persisting in so many areas, even in platforms and spaces where they're supposed to be community for your free expression. And it's like, well, only if you follow our idea of what we want to see. And it's it's frustrating for sure. And it just creates more and more of an echo chamber for that idea of what your body should be like and that it's only okay or only beautiful in this way. And, you know, just changing those things and making more spaces where we just learn about and expose ourselves to accepting other people as they are will kind of shift that.
Yeah, there's no one way to have a body. There's no right way to have a body. Well, I'd be sad if we didn't talk a little bit about plants before we wrapped up because we both love plants. So yeah, I'll just leave it at that. Tell us about how you love plants.
So I have always been super passionate about the environment and plants and animals, probably because I grew up in the middle of nowhere. And a lot of the time I spent outdoors and just observing, you know, nature and plants and seeing the seasonal changes and the growth cycles of plants. And I just really came to respect them and also in almost a spiritual way connect to plants and the way that they cycle and grow. And I've really found them a benefit for my mental health, even just like house plants, not just psychedelic plants. Just getting to see their progress and kind of relating it to myself and my own growth and progress. You know, it's really cool. We're all just like big plants.
I agree. Yeah, I totally agree. I had an ayahuasca journey where it like made sense of all these strange things I would feel and see when I would drink ayahuasca that I hadn't been like, oh, that's interesting. That's weird. I've probably talked about it before on the podcast, but like my hands and kind of like all the touch points on the ground would feel really heavy. Like there was like a magnetic pull pulling my bones or my skin like into the earth. And that was interesting. I'd also feel like sometimes have these head movements towards the light, kind of like turning towards the light. and then also seeing these like, I don't know, like ball, globules moving up and down these kind of ephemeral channels or these like kind of like outer space type colors and things moving up and down these channels. And then I went like really deep into that one day in doing ayahuasca in nature, in like in isolation. It was like this, like a vision quest kind of thing. And I realized, oh, ayahuasca is showing me what it's like to be a plant. Like this is what it's like, plant consciousness is like, and those are all the nutrients and the water moving up and down the stalk, and just related with the plant kingdom so much since that. And I mean, I love the generosity of plants. Like, you know, people throw tons of pesticides on their lawn for years and years, and the dandelions keep coming back, and like contained in the dandelion is the medicine to detoxify yourself from all the pesticides and all the... Not that anyone should prepare medicine from a lawn that's had pesticides on it. Get dandelions from a clean place. But yeah, they just keep coming back. Like, we're here to heal you, even though you keep killing us.
Yeah, I definitely think that plants are always showing us what we need. And they're always kind of showing us the effect of what we're doing globally. And they're always a reflection of ourselves, really. You know, and we need the same things as plants. And if we focused more, I think, overall on those basic needs of like taking time to feel the sun and have water and valued making sure that all of our community members and all of our friends are able to have those moments and are able to have those basic needs, and kind of prioritizing them as the highest things that we need and need to be able to have space and time for, could really shift kind of the like erratic culture that we live in now, which I think would be beneficial to us and the plants.
Yeah, definitely. And the animals. And the plants also, like you mentioned, cycles. I really liked that. Like there's a time to flower and bloom, and there's a time to root down, and then, you know, we make seed, and eventually we all return to the earth to nourish something else to grow.
And the plants have kind of connected me more to the like planetary cycle, and that's been beneficial to my mental health too. Tracking the plants and like in the context of winter that we're coming into now in the north, you know, we're getting close to the solstice, the shortest day of the year, and the plants are closing off and kind of hibernating and saving themselves. And I just kind of bring that into the way that I care for myself right now, that I need to not overextend myself. And, you know, take this time to relax a little bit and take this time to almost hibernate a little bit and work on subtly shifting things as I come up to the solstice. And then once you make it to that point, like you've made it to the hardest point of the year, and every point forward from that, moving through the cycle, you're headed back towards longer days, towards branching back out, towards extending yourself more, which you're able to do if you've taken the rest part of the cycle. So, and that's been, I used to struggle through winter, but connecting to that has really helped me get through it.
Yeah, likewise, likewise. Yeah, I was reflecting last night because I put on all my warm clothes and my warm socks. I used to just sit and like be like, oh, it's so cold here. I can't wait to get out of here. Fuck. And I like wouldn't go buy gloves. I wouldn't like put the right socks on. I'd just like complain and take baths. But yeah, there's a lot of medicine in the winter too. Oh, so will you leave us with a consciousness hack that you've been into lately?
I kind of touched on it a little bit, and it's really paying attention to natural cycles around me, especially the celestial cycle, to check in with myself, especially if I'm struggling or feeling overwhelmed, and kind of putting it in perspective of, well, what are the plants doing right now, you know, is kind of what I need to be doing. And they kind of always show us that. Because the amount of light we get and the amount of access we have to water and even like running water outside and just experiencing it does have an effect on us. So just being aware of those things and prioritizing spending time in the light when it's there has been really beneficial to helping me reconsider the way that I look at difficult parts of my life or my experience, to be, okay, what do I need to do to get through this and to care for myself?
Thank you so much, Shelby.
Thank you.
The Psychedologist is Consciousness Positive Radio. Find us everywhere podcasts are hosted. For more information, visit us on Facebook or online at thepsychedologist.com.